Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
You've heard the expression, and perhaps you know it, its meaning personally. This is a dog-eat-dog world. What on earth has happened? How did human beings sink to the level of being nothing other than the arm of an instinctual reaction, of an emotional surge that pursues some sensation generated by thought? How did that happen? What has happened to the beings on this planet, which I wish there were a way to convey to you, have the possibility of living in a constant sweetness, have the potential to be continually in a pleasing relationship whose existence is the sole source of actual pleasure for that being. How do I convey to you how far off the mark you are? I wish more than perhaps any of you will ever know that it could be said in words that which would change the direction of your will and what it wishes. It can't be said in words. It can only be approximated. And the approximation has been going on since the beginning of time within those individuals for whom it's possible to make such expression to those who want to learn of their lives and what true liberty is about. And we're going to look at it in our talk, and in such a way that I'm trusting that if you pay close attention, I'll be able to weave in your mind a series of ideas whose very relationship between what is large and small, macro and micro, what is celestial and what is common, that in the weaving of these ideas, that you'll receive something that will make it possible for you to change the way in which you think about yourself and why you're here on this earth. Dog-eat-dog world. What is everybody pushing about? How many of you know that you push? And you know, pushing isn't just necessarily you're out there physically pushing people around. Pushing has to do with wanting your way. So you can be by yourself and push yourself around. How many of you do a good job at that? Well, what is it that the human being wants? It's a simple question. And when you examine it, if you boil it all down, which is an essential act if a person's ever going to reach the point where they begin to understand the dynamic in them that drives them around, you start to see, well, you know, what I'm trying to do essentially is I'm trying to figure out my place in life. You know, mom and dad had this place and it was pretty good, but I want to carve out my own place, and maybe mom and dad's place wasn't so good, which is all the more reason I want to carve out my own place. It doesn't make a difference the way a person looks at their history, their familial life. None of that resonates in any real fashion apart from that everyone, because of the unique character of the way in which they're created, the stuff of which their self is made, each and every person wants to find his or her place. Now, unfortunately, seated into this natural wish for an individual to know his or her true place is a kind of timeless, in a manner of speaking, social faux pas, a myth, a lie. Because when a person thinks about finding their place, they always think about finding their place relative to comparing it to someone else's place. And the idea that I can find some place unique in my life, because isn't that the root of it? I want to know my own unique place. How can a person find their own unique place by comparing their place to someone else's? That means the place they find in their mind doesn't exist apart from what they're comparing it to. So the whole notion of a person looking for his or her place in the world around them and through the things in the world is a lie. It can't lead to anything other than a constant sense of frustration, because the plans that one lays out in order to achieve reaching the place they have designated will save them begin from a false idea. But here on earth, there are 6.5 billion or so individual plans. That's what war is. War is when 25 million plans get together and say, this is the plan, although when we get it together, then I'm going to make sure that my plan surfaces at the top of all your plans. That's called the president. That when that plan finally gets in place, then everything will be good. So this plan fights that plan. And then when they acquire what they acquire, which is a muddled mess, then that plan will fight that plan. And because the plan is void and empty of all real meaning, the plan has to redefine itself in order to find the products and the commodities. It needs to keep it itself in place. Then you have global corruption. You have a world tearing itself apart, trying to get to things that even when they get to them, prove themselves to be as empty as the first plan. And at the heart of it, you and I, individuals who have thought to themselves because it was given to them to think, this is the plan for me. I'm going to become, and then fill in the blank, the housewife, the husband, the father, the mother, the owner of the house with the picket fence, the one who drives the Lexus, the one who's able to afford vacations, the one who is an outstanding athlete. Every single one of those plans, one after another, not that anything's wrong in them inherently. Every single one of them turns out to be the seed of discontent for the individual that follows the plan to the end of it. Every one. And not necessarily a discontent and, you know, like, I wish I didn't live in this house, although that's always going on. Why can't people leave things alone? Why can't you leave things alone? Do you know why? Because you have to have a new plan. You have to have a new plan. Because without a new plan, I don't know who this person is. And I'm saying to you that you will never find your true person through a plan, through your plan. Which brings us to the point of the talk. At a certain point, I've followed my plan for, geez, I mean, Phil, how old? Plan after plan after plan after plan after plan after plan. And finally, by the way, when none of the plans work, my plan is to hate the fact that none of my plans worked and that someone else's plan looks like it did. Then I have jealousy. And you can see all of this like some kind of dark rose collapsing in on itself, producing nothing but a bitter scent that sends individuals out into strange relationships where they find themselves bitter, depressed, angry, constantly negative, in under a pressure they don't know what to do with, because the plans of their lives have proven themselves to be without profit. And I'm saying to you that at a certain point a person should say to themselves, I wonder if there's a plan. Not my plan. I wonder if there's a plan, an actual plan. Something that is not my creation, but that exists within the creation that I am a part of. Could there actually be something through which and by which, if I could find my place in it, I wouldn't be punished by the constant collapse of all my plans? Could it even be a thought that a person could have? And at a certain point it does. Because eventually when you realize your experience, moment to moment to moment, is nothing but the bitter fruit of certain plans. Now I know every once in a while, ever have a plan come through? Yahoo! My plan worked! Look at me, Ma! I made it! And then I gotta do it again. Because I can't please the plan maker in me. No matter what I do, it can't be done. And then that is in itself a seed. That in itself is a seed. It's the birth in a human being of a new order of knowledge about himself, about herself, from which it becomes possible to look at the world as something other than a pantry through which the provisions I can take from it will make something of me. Because the world isn't intended to be a pantry for your personal pleasures. Sorry.
Love. The brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
The plan isn't for you to look good. The plan isn't for you to be able to impress people. The plan is beautifully, I might add, hidden from us, in a manner of speaking. But not hidden the way that we think of hidden, kind of hidden in plain sight. So we're going to talk about, is there a difference between my plan and the plan? And what would it mean to me to be able to find out if there was indeed the plan? And I want to add this last point before I dive into the material. The plan, you see, another reason that we don't really want to find it or take part in it is that it's a living plan. That means it can't be thought out in advance. It's never not being a new plan, even though it's one great plan. And in order for you and I to be the planner and receive the benefit of the plans, there's got to be a fixed plan by which I arrive at, extract the goods from the plan, think to myself, wow, what a powerful person I am, and go on with life. But the power in the plan of life, in the real plan, which we're going to show, I'm going to help you to see it. I can't prove anything to you, but I'm going to help you to see it. The real plan is the unfolding of power itself, not empowering anyone, simply revealing itself as being a power. And to participate in what is revealing itself as a power, one shares in that power without ever attributing power to oneself, so that one has strength, confidence, natural courage, a certain kind of goodness, even a kind of love. that isn't born out of someone who's able to measure what he or she is doing for an anticipated result, but because they're the thing itself as it's taking place. So take a breath, because we're going to look at some things that require a bit of effort, which is another reason that there's so little spiritual success on this planet. I want to talk about balance. Because we're searching for whether or not there's a plan that's evident and yet not. Is there something that a human being can actually take part in that isn't his or her particular plan, but I'll add this, but that does afford that individual the expression of his or her individual life? That's an important idea. Because when there is proper order to things, that which is greater allows that which is lesser to express itself as long as what is greater remains in place. The problem with our plan is that we're the greater, and everything else is supposed to serve our plan. It doesn't work. So, I'm holding in my hand a pen, and I'm holding it approximately in the center of itself, so that it'll balance on my thumb, and if I can do it, it'll be a neat trick. There we go. Oh, fell off again. You can see what I'm trying to show you is that there's a point at which this thing balances, and that's the center of the pen. And the reason that we're looking at the center of this pen is because in the center of something, this balance point, I want you to see that point is an expression of, reveals the two opposites of the pen. That center of anything that one looks at it, when they see it, what they're seeing is something invisible, because you can't see the center of anything. But the center is revealed when you see a pencil, a stick balancing. You have a pair of opposites, each end of the pen, and then you have the center of that pen that exists in the pen. Listen, please. It precedes those opposites. Go slow. It's a little deep, but you'll get it. The center of anything is the point of expression of opposites. You can see the end of the pen, both sides, but you can't see, now listen carefully, that which actually gives rise to the opposites. We think in our minds that the center of something exists because there are opposites. We think the center of this, that this balance point exists because of these opposites, and I want you to see that these opposites exist because there is a center point. And that the center point is always an invisible point. Which, now listen, because it's deep, but it's so important, which the opposites must yield to in order for there to be balance. Look, the right and the left. The right wants to be the right. Right doesn't want to know about left. Right wants to go right. Left wants to go left. When the center is found in right and left, right can't go right and left can't go left, because they both yield to the center point. The center is greater than the opposites that are revealed through it. Are you getting this a little bit? I hope so. Now, why is that so important? Because we're seeing in nature the submission of the opposites to the center. The opposites, the ends, surrender to that which gives them rise when that center is in place. And it's always in place, because this is the next point. There's nothing created that doesn't have a center. I'm holding a classroom bell. This has a center. Now, I'm not about to sit and try to find it while I'm talking to you, but no matter how I turn this bell, there is a center, and the center is always moving inside of the object. Because if I turn it like this, it has a different center point. But the center is there even when I'm holding it upside right or upside down. Now, this may not be as fascinating to you yet as it is to the speaker. But the reason that we're looking at it, and the reason it's so important, is that we have found a tremendous principle, and that is that the opposites must always yield to a center point. So that there is something greater than the opposites. But that we can't see which is greater than the opposites, because it is actually not only hidden in them, but gives birth to them. So now we know what gives birth to the opposites. Just like one gives birth to two, the center gives birth to the opposites. Now, why is this so important to us? Because everything that we look at, without exception, has in it a center to which everything is yielding. You can't take an object that isn't the expression of opposites. Every object in itself is an expression of the opposites. And the reason you know they're an expression of the opposites is because they have a center point. That means that when we look out a window and we see a tree, which I want you to do, or wherever you are, if you're driving, be careful. You look out and you see a tree. That tree, at the moment you see it, has a center of gravity, a balance point. But, and this is what we don't see, the tree is growing. And as the tree is growing, the center point is moving. Which is so fascinating, because it means, in one essence, that the center of the tree doesn't move up the tree as it grows, but the tree grows around the center. See, don't you think of that? You think of a tree. Well, the center of gravity, the balance, the center is moving up as the tree grows. Well, no, the center isn't moving up as the tree grows. The opposites are growing around the center. So we have an extraordinary principle in our hands. A beautiful one. Why? Because everything is yielding to the center at all times, because the center gives birth to them. You can't have opposites without a center. The center is constantly, the center is the greater of the opposites. It is the greater force, because it gives birth to the opposites. Why is that so important for us to understand? Because we are constantly creating for ourselves our own center. And our plans are the opposites. Try to see it. Why do I want to make this new plan? Because that one didn't work out. Why am I looking to get rid of you? Because I want to be happy. Everything about the way the mind works flips from one opposite to another. And each one of those flips, every way in which a person comes up with a new design for himself, is based on a temporary, seemingly true center in that human being, from which they look out and they say, here's what I have to do in order to resolve what took place over there. But the fact of the matter is, because there is no point of rest, See, it centers perfect rest, yet perfect potential. There's no rest in the human heart. There's no rest in the human mind. There's no center in the human being yet. Only an illusory one. A false self, a false center that is forever coming up with that which momentarily, listen please, balances it. But when one gets to what has said will balance one, and one finds that one is still off balance, then they have to push and shove and come up with another plan to reach a momentary sensation of being at peace, of having balance. Are you following what we're talking about?
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Now, this is a false order. It's a false order. And the key here for us, relative to what we're talking about, is that our attempt in life all the time is by trying to will balance instead of accepting that it already exists and living from it. I'll say it again because it's a key idea, transition. Our approach to life is to continually try to will, figure out how to get things settled, resolve this issue, get that person to change, get another way to look at the problem tomorrow, so that we are active towards the opposites. We're always trying to control the condition instead of understanding that the true center of things, which we know exists, look, if it exists in nature, and everything is built around it, and we can see that as a fact of physicality, how much truer is it spiritually? And yet we know nothing of that peace, of that true center that all opposites are continually yielding to and finding in their relationship with that true center rest, balance, power, because it's pure potential. So if a person understands, you say, well, look, I kind of get what you're talking about, that somehow or other, my activity as I am now has nothing whatsoever to do with the idea of yielding to something greater than myself. I am the greater and everything should yield to me is the purview. Yes or no? I'm the greater. Look at me, man. I can get angry. Look at me, man. I got plans. I got dough. Look at me, I'm beautiful. Whatever it is that a person momentarily sets up as being the icon by which they're going to reach some kind of contentment, and then the thing dies all the time, and a person goes, I got to start again. So the question is, what does it mean? What does it take for a human being to begin to yield to his or her true center? And what is that true center that he or she yields to? That has to be the question. If I can see there's this perfect, perfect balance. Have you ever looked at a tree on the side? I mean, just the fact that a tree stands even is a miracle. How the heck does that tree know that when this huge branch comes off the oak tree like there and then way over there, how does that tree stand? Would you like to sit and hold that load? The tree isn't holding a load at all. The center holds the load. See? The center holds the load. So how do I understand that practically? How do I take that principle and begin to work with it to understand what it means to me? And how can I begin to become a different kind of human being within whom the center, within whom God, within whom Christ holds the load? How do I actually do that so that I'm not this unpleasant, cranky, greedy, irritable, pushy human being whose very nature is intended to be an expression of beauty but is presently nothing but an ugliness covered up with fine clothes and a way to act? How do I become a different person? So this is what we're talking about. Let me read something to you. This is from the New Testament. It's in John. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me. And where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Now is my soul troubled. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, but for this cause came I unto this hour. Father, glorify thy name. Now, those of you who have a negative reaction to Scripture, get over it. Those of you who think you know what it means, get over it. What we're talking about here in this idea has to do with everything relative to what does it mean for a seed to die, and to what does it die into, and what is born out of that death? Because we can use our minds properly to see right in front of us all of this activity expressing itself, but we have to want to understand it in its expression in ourselves. What does this mean to me? Where is that seed in me? What is it that it dies to? And what is it that is born out of that seed, if that seed exists, that has a center in it, which everything is yielding to in order for it to become a new form? What does that mean to me? How can I understand something like that? So this is what we have to look at. First, take a simple seed. Does a seed, any seed, not yield to a principle greater than itself when it ceases to be itself, consumes itself, and through transformation becomes something other than itself, yet still itself? Yes. The seed yields. It has to yield. It doesn't have a choice. By the way, we should be very grateful. Imagine if all the seeds one day became self-conscious. Said, nope, I'm going to stay in the dirt and rot. Because that's what a seed does that stays in the earth of itself and doesn't do what it was intended to do. So here's this seed, and built into it is both the substance that is required for transformation, but not built into it, but capable in it to receive, is a relationship with a will, a force, an energy that is greater than itself, that activates what is in itself so that all of itself may express itself in the new form. That's not spiritual. That there it is. You can go monkey with a seed yourself if you want to. It's a pretty good thing to do. You can learn. So that which is passive in the seed naturally yields to something that is active working on it to produce a new form that will go through the same principle again in in order to produce a flower. And the flower will again yield. First the flower becomes the expression of the activity, then it becomes passive so that the same thing can take place in it again. And again and again and again and again. And each one of these principles reflecting, if you will, within itself an infusion of an energy that stirs and awakens this seed, so that the seed, in responding to that, becomes what it was created to be when it was first made as a seed. Now, that idea that the seed dies to itself, it dies to itself because it yields to something greater than itself. The seed has to do that. A human being doesn't. A human being is given a kind of will. It's a false will, but it stands in the way of the individual taking part in what? Now I'm going to go back. I said, is there a plan? Is there the plan? Well, you look out at nature, you can see the plan. If you have eyes to see it, you can see the plan is that all objects, all creation is a formation of opposites, no exception. A leaf is an expression of the opposites, and the leaf itself is, through this process of active and passive forces, the center of the leaf giving rise to itself, that giving rise to all of the other forms. That all that time there is a process in everything going through life and death. Being born, passing, being born, passing, being born, passing. Human beings don't have to pass. Because sown into them is a special seed. And that special seed is the seed which can be in itself conscious of this relationship that we're talking about. Because when a person is aware of, when a person is conscious of something, truly awake to it, that individual shares in the life of that which he or she is truly awake to. When you're truly awake and aware of the moment of beauty, does not the moment of beauty reflect itself both outside and yet reveal to you a beauty that was unknown in you up to the moment that it was revealed? So that in your awareness you share in that. In your awareness of the plan, in your awareness of God's life, and your proper relationship to it, which is what this talk is working up to, you are given a life eternal. You are given that which allows you to understand that within you, as the core of you, is something that was never born and that will never die, but that repeats itself, returning, dying, living, continually. Now, how can we approximate the idea of the seed, of the center point, of this idea of balance, of peace, with the understanding of such an idea that this plan exists? And here's how it's done. And I wish that every Christian on earth were able to hear what I'm going to say now. Because when you talk to people around the world as I do, and you get everyone throwing their slogans at you, believing that professing to be a different human being is the same thing as being possessed by that which transforms the heart, then you start to understand why the world is the way it is, and you also are given with greater clarity what you must do. It is said, in Christian terms, that Christ died that I might live. This is what the slogan is. And then if I accept that, that somehow I live. But I want to ask you a question. And I ask every human being on the earth this question, even though everyone may not hear it. This question is radiating out all around the world as I'm asking it. If he died that I might live, but if I don't live, then what purpose, what profit was there in his death?
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
If he died, if that light, if that truth, however one wants to phrase it, if that life died, in quotes, so that I might live, what profit is there? What goodness of any kind is in that if I don't live? And what people will say is, I do live because I believe that I live. And I say that life has nothing to do with belief at all. Nothing. To live means to be in relationship with that light and to act from that light accordingly. To live means I don't harm anyone with my thoughts and feelings. That's what it means to live in the truest sense of it. This is high. To live means to be kind to one another. To live means to be considerate to one another. To live means to be conscious of one's environment and to participate in a natural way according to what the environment asks of you in the moment, not what you want to take from it to fulfill your idea of a plan. Where I live, I'm very lucky because I have all of these animal friends. And I sit there, and there's a three-ring circus outside my window every morning. I love it. It's just this big circus. The gray tree squirrels, ground squirrels, turkeys, stellar jays, a host of creatures, and at least 15 species of birds. And they're all in an area about 15 square feet. And you know, when you watch it, the first sense of it is that it's chaos. You know, because turkey puffs up, squirrel jumps on turkey, turkey leaps, stellar jay flies away, other squirrels respond. I mean, it's just like that. But do you know it's perfect order? That nothing moves anywhere in that 15 square feet, that nothing moves, that everything doesn't move. So it's not chaos, it's intelligence in action. It's instinctual intelligence expressing itself in what appears to be chaos. We have the possibility of spiritual intelligence. Spiritual intelligence is moved by everything that moves. It responds appropriately only at levels that have to do with the heart and the mind and of consideration for one another, of understanding what it means to be a decent human being. But we don't act that now because we live from a pseudo life, a plan that is a false plan. So now, leading up to this, because I only have 8 minutes left, how do I take part in that plan? And I want you to listen to this. It's a little emotional, and I can't help it, meaning that the idea, I know it's going to strike you. But you listen to this, and then we're going to describe what it means. There was a film called Saving Private Ryan. And in Saving Private Ryan, if you never saw the film, I'll briefly summarize it for you. Tom Hanks played this captain, and he got word from his colonel or general that there was a young fellow named Ryan whose three or four brothers in World War II all got wiped out within a week, and that he was the only Ryan left, and that the government didn't want him to be the last Ryan. I better not start talking about our government. He wanted this last Ryan to be saved, so he sent a crew out to go find Private Ryan in the middle of this world war in Europe. So these fellows have to go find Ryan. Well, they actually find him, because it's a movie. And in the end of the movie, they have to hold a bridge, because the Germans, if they pass over it, are going to be able to take this particular part of Europe and the supply lines be cut off. And in the end, the captain, played by Tom Hanks, gets mortally wounded. And he's sitting up against this burned-out hulk of a car on the other side of the bridge, because at the last moment, the Allies came and bombed the Germans and got, you know, they didn't make the pass. They held the bridge. And Ryan's lying there. Tom Hanks is lying there dying. And the boy, Private Ryan, whose life had been saved by his valorous action, the boy came up to him and Ryan whispered something to him. And what he whispered was, "Earn this. Earn this. I'm dying that you might live. Earn this. Don't leave this place where we are, where this sacrifice was made for you. Don't you go out into the world and become something that doesn't deserve, that isn't the right expression of what was given to you so that you could go out and become that. Earn this." I tell you, that's what God says to human beings. Earn this. And I want to tell you this because I have to. You don't. You don't. You're busy earning your life. Period. You're busy filling out your plans. Period. You're busy thinking about how to make your lives comfortable. Period. You don't earn what has been given to you. And if you don't earn what has been given to you, it will be taken away. It will be taken away as surely as the seed that doesn't fulfill the purpose of itself loses what it was given to be in that plan. A man or a woman who doesn't take part in the plan of life, which, by the way, doesn't belong to anybody, they lose it. Now, how do I take part in the plan? What does that mean? Here's the idea. It's three words, and then we're going to describe it. Take a deep breath. Take my place. Take my place. What does that mean, take my place? Here I am. I'm starting to get angry. I can feel a certain rage coming up, or I'm starting to feel depressed. I'm starting to sit and think about tomorrow. I'm starting to worry about what that person means or what they didn't do. I'm starting to judge. All of these moments in which here's this darkness, and all such self-consideration and self-reference is a form of darkness because it wraps itself around the seed and keeps the light from it. Here it is. And in that moment, the willing soul who wants to earn what God has given him in terms of the possibility of a true life, he says in that moment to the light, to the awareness, "Take my place. You come in. You be in my place now, so that I am not holding this place, protecting this place, proving this place. I'm not in it anymore. You take my place." Have you ever seen those movies, those great movies, when the right principal is there, and here's the lieutenant and the sergeant, you know, the gruff sergeant with five stripes, and the lieutenant says, "Get in," and the sergeant says, "No, you take my place. Get in the plane. You get in the plane. I will give my life for you. You get in the plane. Take my place." That's what we're saying has to happen to us. Right in the middle of every moment of our life, we have to remember that there is something that wants to take our place if we will give our place to it. I surrender my place. I surrender my life. I give it up. Because I understand that what is greater, if I yield to it, will come into me and do for me what I have been unable to do in all of my pushing and shoving and all of my willing and wanting. That any moment in which a person is willing, if you will, to accept that within him is the center of the universe, the Christ, the truth, this thing that is the ground and the seed and the flower, that to surrender to it is an act that is not some kind of sentimental, sensationalized, ridiculous notion born of imagining yourself. It's a deliberate act of giving myself up. I'm angry. Whew. Wow. I come wide awake. Take my place. And in the moment that I say take my place and I remember myself properly, into me comes that which by its very presence holds me, gives me an understanding of myself that is not born of me trying to resolve the issue on some opposite level, but that actually changes my relationship with the moment because I have put myself in the center of his life. I've put myself in the center of true life. And by putting myself in the true center of real life, what bad can happen to me? So when you see the idea of take my place, that's an act of love, isn't it? I say, look, I'm going to lay down my life right now. Because my life says if I don't straighten you out, man, I'm going to lose something. It's an actual sacrifice. The seed is going in the ground to die there. What does it mean? God, I'm so upset about the implication of this. Wait a minute. I can't be going through that without there have been some kind of plan in my mind by which somehow or other I was going to have security or safety or strength or something. And no, I'm not going to do that anymore. Take my place. You handle it. You go, now listen, you, and this is what's so fantastic, because you're saying, in essence, much along that line, is I'm going to give myself up now, not because I know that something right is going to happen from it, but I understand that if I give myself up, that I will serve a greater purpose. I actually see that giving myself to something that is greater, that in the very act of giving myself up, letting something take my place, I actually am letting something take my place. And then I don't have to deal with it. But I'm responsible for it, see? In my awareness of the negative state, in my awareness of myself, into which I say, take my place, what have I done? I have ceased to identify with who I am. I have ceased to identify with what I take myself to be. And in the moment of ceasing to identify, lo and behold, what happens? That true identity, the source of the true plan, pours in. And then a person knows for themselves what it means to be sustained, what it means to be given true life. Find out for yourself, work at this, take my place.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.